Blog Talk Radio.
October 21st, 2010, and this is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Poke Runyon, and tonight we're having a discussion on what is commonly called astral projection. Now, we will use what we still consider the best occult manual on the subject, and that is The Art of Astral Projection by OVL. Of course, we think it's the best one because it's in the Hermetic tradition, so that's why we consider it the best. And we use that as our starting point. Now we'll mention path workings, interplane projection. We already had a show on that, but we'll touch on that. And we'll mention this versus the so-called OOBE, or the OBE, and that's the out-of-body experience. We'll compare these methods with Tibetan practice, Powai Yoga and Throng Jug Yoga, both of which I have practical experience with. And then we'll talk about Jack London's novel, The Star Rover. And then, of course, that's sensory deprivation, astral projection. We'll examine self-hypnosis and sensory deprivation. We will mention Robert Monroe and Hemisync. That's binaural beats. For those of you who, Hemisync is Monroe's particular version of that. Now we'll discuss the music of the spheres and, of course, remote viewing. So, we said, tune in, turn on, and get out. And away we go. All right, now, I want Dr. X to call in tonight because Dr. X, if you're out there, Dr. X, this is Sky Captain calling Dr. X. I want you to call in tonight because you knew OPL personally. And, you know, so our call-in number is 347-857-1830. I'll repeat that. 347-857-1830. So call in anytime during the show. Now, let's start off with what is astral projection and why is it important in occultism and what is why is it important in what we're doing in magic, and try to get it in perspective, and especially in Hermetic perspective. Now, astral projection is a term which is generally applied to both, well, all three forms of projection, and these are not necessarily out of body. That's a phenomenon which needs some clarification. We'll get into that. But there are three separate bodies, all contained basically within your body. They're all part of you, but they're three separate shells. We'll say about that are separate bodies, and you can get your consciousness into each one of these bodies. You can't, as far as we know, you can't get your consciousness in all three of them at the same time, and more or less, but you can, except they're not consciously there. But you need, in order to do this work, you start off with the first envelope. The first body, which is called the etheric. Now, the etheric body is kind of an energy sheath. There was a complete matrix of the human body and energy, and this is the network of the nadis and the chakras and the Hindu system and the nadis and the Eastern systems, all of the nerve, you know, the spiritual network that follows the nervous system and follows the glandular system. It's very closely, the etheric body is very closely attached to the physical body. It's what causes the aura that Kirlian photography produces. And if you don't think that this is real, just take, you know, probably most of you have heard of this experiment. Just rub your hands together, your palms together, and then hold your palms about an inch apart, and you'll feel it. You will feel this energy that surrounds just outside of your body and is inside your body. This is the etheric body. Now, I want to point out that the Hindu and the Eastern chakra system, at least the Hindu system, is actually a part of this etheric body, not the astral. The astral is the next body. Now, the next level up or in, because either way, because these bodies are within yourself. You can do all of this projection. You can go to the ends of the universe and never leave your body. And that's an important thing that you have to understand. That this business, regardless of whether you pop out and look down at yourself or any of this kind of business, these bodies do not have to actually leave. They don't have to separate. That separation doesn't have to occur, but it does. And you can use that occurrence, and you can walk away with the etheric body and all of that. But it doesn't have to. You can. These bodies are within you. This is why we use the expression the inner planes. If you want to know why that is, because you're going in a sense into these inner planes, even though they are higher forms of vibration than your material body. I know that's kind of hard to grasp, but then that's the way it is. Now, the astral body is a finer body, a finer envelope, and it is the realm. It's the realm of emotion, and the realm of imagination, and it's the formative realm. We equate it in Kabbalah with the Yetzirah. That's the spheres all the way from Yesod on up to Hesed and Gabura, and then past that's the abyss, and then you get into the next body. Now, the next body above the astral is called the mental body, and that is a body of the higher intellect, and that's not as emotional. That's more archetypal, more abstract, and the mental body is in the Kabbalah is in the Briatic dimension, and then above that is in if you want to take the Eastern the philosophy, the Devanchic plane, and that's Hatzaluth and in Kether. Now, but regardless of that, remember we have three of these bodies, these subtle bodies that we work with. That's the etheric body first, the astral form, where we do have the symbolism, and we have the mythology, and we have the emotion, and we have all of these fascinating things that we do. Now, in our particular, in Hermetic yoga, our chakras in Hermetic yoga are in the astral body. They're not in the etheric body. The Hindu chakras are in the etheric body. Now, one of the advantages of having chakras in the astral body is that they in turn create preforms which influence the etheric and the physical body. The zero or the astral plane is where you do your magical work. This is where you establish your talismanic images. This is where you confront other beings. This is where you you go on your path workings. This is where you do your deep magical work. So consequently, the idea is in our case is to get through the etheric and to the astral. Now, our friend Ophiel, Edward Peach, wrote this little book, The Art and Practice of Astral Projection, way back in the 1960s. He wrote it in the 1950s. And it is essentially a practical manual based upon the regular Hermetic tradition, Golden Dawn work, and the regular Hermetic tradition. And Ed Peach has, in this book, he has four methods. And I've used all four of his methods in combinations, and I will discuss the results of that. But anyway, the four methods he has what he calls his little system, and that's primarily etheric, to get an etheric projection. And then he has the dream method. And then after the dream method, he has the body of light method, and that's where you create this body on the astral, and that's kind of like what we do with creating our psychic centers within ourselves. And creating our whole magical body, we create the astral psychic centers, which are the Hermetic spheres, actually. And we create that within ourselves. The origin of this, of course, is the middle pillar exercise, which I believe Felkin developed. And that's the anchor point for creating the body of light in the Hermetic system. And then you can, in turn, take that body of light that you've created and do all kinds of things with it, which we'll get into in a minute. And then, after the body of light method, Ed Peach has in his book, he has the symbol method, which is, of course, the tatwas. Now, the tatwas, just for those of you who don't understand what a tatwa is, a tatva, they are a series of five symbols which represent the five elements. And in this, these are philosophical elements, of course, our good old spirit, that's one tatwa. And then we have, air, and we have fire, and we have water, and we have earth. So what we have here is these five. They're basically cards. You make cards about 4 inches by 6 inches, maybe. And what you do is you make these symbols, and you make them in flashing colors. And that means that you have the primary color that represents the element and the design that represents the element. In the case of fire, that would be a red triangle, solid red, flaming red triangle. And then on the background of that, you have a complementary green. And you can figure out what's going to happen when you use this thing. You stare at this, and of course the red, after you stare at it for a little bit, the red wants to go green, and the green wants to go red. So with your eyes, it starts to flash. Now this was a magical secret that the Golden Dawn didn't invent. This, I think, P.B. Randolph was using it way back in the 1850s, and who knows where he got it, but it's used since the occult revival in the 1960s. The advertising people picked it up, and now, of course, they're using flashing colors and all this advertising. You see it all over the place. But still, it's very effective magically. We use it on the Enochian tablets. And so you make these cards up. Akasha is an egg. It's a black egg on a silver background, and then fire, of course, is the red upward pointing red triangle on a green background, and then you have error is a blue circle, blue dot on an orange background, and water is a crescent moon, silver crescent on a black background, and then Earth is a yellow square on a purple background. These are all flashers. Now, these symbols form astral doorways, and what we do with them in magic is we take them and put a little double sticky tape behind them. Can't get along without double sticky tape, and stick them on a magic mirror, either a non-optic or an optic magic mirror, and then we hypnotically go into our hypnotic trance. And by the way, in order to make the Tatwa system work, you really have to go into a hypnotic trance. You have to, and the way to do that is to train yourself in self-hypnosis. And so that when the operator gets out there in a group, and we do this lying, as you've probably seen in the videos, we lie down in a circle, in the magic circle with our heads together, look up at the magic mirror, big convex mirror, and we put the Tatwa on it, we stare up at that, and then the operator puts us into a hypnotic trance, which we are already able to achieve because we've trained ourselves in self-hypnosis. And then we go and we go through that doorway, doorway in the mirror hanging over our heads. It gets larger and larger. We close our eyes and we go through it, and we're in the astral realm. Now, that's how it works, and it works out very, very well. But let's get back. That's not exactly an advanced method, but it's let's say that's intermediary. Let's go back to Ophiel's first method here, his little system which he created for this. What this does is, if you want to have I got a call. This is the Hermetic Hour. You're on the air. Who am I talking with?
This is Dr. X.
Oh, Dr. X, thank you for calling. Thank you for calling. Sky Captain was calling you, and you responded. Now,
I didn't.
Tell us about Ophiel.
Well, I can't tell you a great deal. I only met him one time. It was at a restaurant where he was giving a lecture down about 3rd and Fairfax in Los Angeles in 1971. He was talking about his book, which you've already mentioned, The Art and Practice of Astral Travel, or Astral Projection. And after his lecture, we went off to a late dinner and talked more about the system and a little more about magic in general. But that really is the only contact I'd had with him. And then when the Internet became available, I tried to look him up again, and it appears he had left the scene in about 1988, unfortunately. But he left some wonderful books behind.
Well, you're right about that, and I'm looking at his astral projection right now, and I think personally, and I think maybe you might agree with me, that this little book, at least for Hermetic practitioners especially, this little book is really ideal, and we should all have it. We should all have it and study it. Would you say that's would you agree with that?
Well, I really agree. He writes in a very clear, understandable manner, and stepwise, and there's not a lot of extra stuff in there. He's not trying to fill up pages to get to the magic. Oh, what is it? You need to have about 250 pages for a book these days, right? But he just wrote what he thought was the best, and I rather liked it so much. In fact, I'm going to go reread it again. You've enthused.
Well, I reread it again before the show, and it is just delightful. I know he's a little bit fatherly. You know, he gets like a grandfather and wags his finger at you and all of that. But you know, I mean, I think that's fine. And because a lot of the stuff that he wags his finger and says, you better do this, he's right. I mean, you know, when he says that this is what you better do, he means it. And I think it's a delightful book, and I think we should all, those of us that are in, and this is an essential part of Hermetic work. I mean, this is, you really can't avoid this in Hermetic work. And so consequently, it's, and the great thing about it, Mark, the great thing about this is that OPL is not one of these 25%ers who could do a natural OOBE. And,
right.
You know, I'm one of the 75%. I design, you know, everything we do in the OTA is designed for 75% of the people who don't do natural OOBEs. And that's the same way, that's one of the things I love about this book of OPLs. He doesn't assume that you can do this easily. He gets you into it. He says, okay, this is going to be a lot of work, but you're going to love it, and let's get at it, and let's do it. And that's what I really like about it. So anyway, thanks for calling out. Thanks for calling in, and we'll see you soon.
Okay, but I want to make a comment about using the Tatavas, if I may. I've experienced this a bit, and my biggest breakthrough came from reading a book by William Seabrook, and he described how they used symbology like the Tatavas. In this case, they saw a hexagram on a door, and they waited until the door opened, and they stepped through. They meditated on this until it opened. Well, the Tatavas are very similar, and that was the breakthrough for me. Perhaps it'll help others.
Which book was that now? Seabrook. I know Seabrook wrote a book on voodoo.
Yeah, it was the Magic Isle, or Magic Island, I should say, more accurately.
Yeah, that's the book. That's the Seabrook one I read. What is this one you're talking about, though?
Yeah, it's one William Seabrook's book called Witchcraft, Its Power in the World Today. And it's also, I think he did mention it in the Magic Island as well, but I can't remember for sure. But it was a method that he used that he liked. Some people feel that you should envision or look at the cards of the Tatavas and try to project yourself into them. I had better luck with imaging them in my mind's eye on a door and then having the door open and then going to the world that they represent. That helped me more.
That's a good idea, and that's a good way to use them. What I like to do is I like to put them on the mirror and have them get larger and larger and larger and have you go through them. Anyway, thanks for calling in, and we'll see you soon, okay?
Okay, will do. Bye for now.
Right. Okay. Anyway, to get back to OPL and his initial system, his little system here, what he wants you to do in the little system that he developed, and this is his own design, and this is to get your etheric projection. This is to give you that experience of having an etheric projection. What he says is to develop a route inside your own house, a little route, like say going from the bathroom to the kitchen, and memorize everything along that route, everything that you possibly can memorize along that route, and you keep memorizing it. Now this means you got to clean your house up, get rid of a lot of clutter, which is a good thing too. So memorize the route all the way from your, say, your bedroom to your kitchen, and then you keep doing this, and you keep memorizing it, keep working on it, and then you imagine yourself. You lie down and you start imagining yourself walking your route, and you keep doing this, and you keep memorizing the route, and keep imagining yourself lying. You keep lying down, keep memorizing and the route, and keep imagining yourself. And then, if you keep doing this, pretty soon you're going to be able to actually do this. I mean, you'll do what some people refer to as a pop out, and you'll do it. And that's a very, very good way to do it. Now, that takes some work, but that's a good way to make that particular breakthrough. Now, the one I really liked, though, the one I used to make the breakthrough was his next one, and that's called the Green Method. Now, the Green Method is the first thing you got to do, and every magician should do this anyway, is to start keeping a dream record. Keep a dream record, and then you wake up every time you have a significant dream. You should immediately wake up and write it down, and then or if you don't want to do that, then in the morning when you're in that hypnopompic, you see that when you go to sleep, that's a hypnagogic state. When you're going to sleep, when you wake up, it's the hypnopompic state. So when you're in the hypnopompic state, it might be the other way around, like stalactites and stalagmites. I never can get it straight. But when you're in that hypnopompic state, then you can remember your dream and quickly wake up to write it down and then go back to sleep if you want to. But whatever. Now, pretty soon you get to the point where you're really, really getting to know your dreams. And then you're getting to control your dreams, and you start observing your dreams, and you start analyzing your dreams while you're dreaming. Now, you can see where this is leading. This is leading to lucid, what we now call lucid dreaming. Okay? So you become a lucid dreamer. Now, you keep working on this, and then you try doing your projection. Now, when I did this, I kept working on this, and I still keep a dream record, by the way. But the first time I did it, it was a combination of the route and the dream method, the little system and the dream method. What happened was I got up in the middle of the night, and I went and I started walking toward the kitchen. And I got halfway to the kitchen, and I thought, wait a minute. Something about this is exactly, I'm walking, I think I'm awake. This is it. I'm feeling the floor, and I'm here, but there's something about this that doesn't quite feel, like it's, I'm not in Kansas anymore, even though, I got this feeling. And I thought, wait a minute now. And I decided to see if I could put my fingers through the glass window. So I put my hand up against the glass, and I felt the glass. And then I very slowly started pushing my hand through the glass. And this was the weirdest, strangest, most realistic sensation. I mean, here I am sticking my fingers through the glass, and my hand is going through the glass. And I'm starting to get scared because I think, well, what happens if I pull my hand back? I'll rip my hand off. So I said, well, maybe I better pull it back. So I started very slowly, and sure enough, I could feel the glass. I mean, it was just like, I could feel the glass almost scratching my hand as I pulled it back out, and I got it out, and I was relieved. And then I decided to go outside. So I went out the door, and it was at night, and I started walking across the yard, and then I kind of had a feeling like, hey, I think I can fly. And so I pushed up off the ground, and I started to fly. And I kept flying and flying and flying, and I goes up where I could look at the neighborhood, and then it sort of faded into a dream. Now, here's what happened, actually. I did the etheric projection. The first part of it was the etheric projection, just like Ed said. The second part of it, when I walked across the yard and hopped off and started to fly, that was the beginning of an astral projection. Now, this is the experience I had using both these methods. Now, the body of light method, we'll get into that in a minute. I want to mention something else first before we get into that. One of the things that Ed Peach does not mention, and neither does Monroe, neither does Robert Monroe mention this, not that I recall, is that the astral plane is driven by emotion, and it's the plane of creation, and it's the plane of emotion, of preforms, of archetypes. Well, archetypes are perhaps a little higher, but it's the plane where preforms are created. Now, that means that the astral plane is sexual. There's a lot of sex power and sexual desire and sexual frustration that influences the astral plane. And as I said, Ed Peach, and neither Ed Peach nor Monroe talks about this at all. So you can, if you want to use this method, which is something I did, you can use another method, and that is to create yourself some sort of an attractive partner that you create being something of an artist, I was able to create my own image, and which I did. And if you're not an artist, well, maybe you can use something else, a picture that you like or whatever, and create this entity on the astral plane. You keep creating it, keep staring at it, looking at it, and creating it. And then the best thing to do is to be celibate and to contain all your sexual energy. And then every night you hypnotize yourself and invoke this little creature. And sure enough, it'll work. Oh boy, does it work! And so that's a method that I've experimented with and successfully, and had it work. Now, the body of light method, which is the method that we use quite a bit in conjunction with the symbol method, which we were talking about. The body of light method is where you create your body of light within yourself. Now, Franz Barden mentions this similar method to what Ophiel has, and this is where you imagine. First, say, look at your hands, and then close your eyes and see. The astral hands, because in this case your body of light really ought to be built with astral fluid. So you see the astral hands, and then do this with your legs, do this with your arms, do this with your whole body. Just keep working on creating this body of light. Now, this is the way Ed is talking about. He's not talking about creating chakras. And creating a chakra system. That's our way of doing it, is to create your whole chakra network, the whole all the spheres of the tree of life within yourself, and then inhabit them with angels and God forms and whatever. Either way you want to do this, you create this astral body, and this is your body of light. This is the body that you inhabit. Now, you can do various things with this body. You can make it very, very small. You make it very, very small. So in a temple, it can run off your tongue. It can run off your tongue, jump up on the altar, and jump into the ball, and do all sorts of things with it, which gets me to talking about some Tibetan methods here to use the body of light. When we studied Vajrayogini with the Sakya order, as there were about four of us from the OTA that went through that program. We studied several forms of yoga that involve what we would call astral projection. One of these forms was called Powai Yoga. This is where you sit down in a meditative position and dissolve. Just sit there and dissolve your body from the bottom up. You keep dissolving it, dissolving it, dissolving it, dissolving it, until your consciousness is all that's left up at the top. And then you go out. This is called death practice. This is Powai Yoga. Now, my colleague and sometimes mentor, Lon Duquette, has a wonderful westernized version of this, this Powai thing, that I would recommend is better for Westerners, and that you'll find that in his book, The Accidental Christ. Now, I asked Lon about this, where he got this from, and he said his wife Constance came up with it. This is where you lie down, get yourself in a nice light trance, and then you say, "I am not my feet. I am that which remains. I am not my calves, I'm that which remains. I'm not my knees, I'm that which remains." You keep going all the way up through your body until you get all the way up to your brain. Your ears are gone. Your eyes are gone. Everything's gone. Yeah, I'm not my brain. I'm that which remains. Don't say you're not your mind, Jenny, because you want to keep your mind. Okay. You say, I'm not my brain. I'm that which remains. And then it's, I am that which remains. And oh, boy, will that ever get you out if you do it right. And this is a beautiful little method. It's like POA. Now, Throng Jug, I mentioned, Throng Jug Yoga. This is something that the Mongolians like to do. And this is shamans. This is shamans yoga. This is like darker than you think, you know, werewolves on the astral. This is where you can transfer your consciousness into an animal, or you can become an animal on the astral. Send your astral body out in animal form, I know this it sounds evil, but then on the other hand, there are nice ways to use it. Become an eagle. And go and see all the things an eagle sees from an eagle's point of view. Yeah, sure. So Throng Jug doesn't have to be evil, but it's a very 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 powerful astral form of astral projection. Now let's talk a moment about, and I mentioned here, Jack London's Star Rover. Now Jack London, by the way, was a relative of Soror's Andrea sitting over here. So she's really, really quite, you know, Jack London's right in her own family. Star Rover is a novel of his, which is not fun to read, but it will really, really give you a good idea of sensory deprivation, astral projection. Because it's based on fact. It's based on truth. This takes place back before World War I in San Quentin prison, and apparently what they were doing was for certain inmates that they considered incorrigible, they would not just put them in solitary confinement, but they would strap them in a straitjacket, put them in a straitjacket to where they couldn't move at all. And of course, the effect of this for most people would be to drive them literally insane, because they get so claustrophobic that they would just scream and howl and foam at the mouth so it really was a terrible punishment. But the character in Jack London's novel, he develops in his solitary cell a relationship with the next prisoner in the next cell by Morse code, and the guy in the next cell teaches him how to beat the jacket, and he teaches him to hypnotize himself once he's inside the jacket, to completely hypnotize himself, relax, and get out. And so the Star Rover, Jack's character, starts going out and having other lives. He was back before the French Revolution, he was a Scaramouche type character, and he was having love affairs and duels and all these kind of things, having these wonderful adventures while he was tied up in the straitjacket that was used to drive everybody else, you know, completely insane, and he was just having fun. And of course, this story, by the way, influenced Richard Shaver, and Richard Shaver wrote his own version of it called The Mind Rovers, which is also very good too. Let's talk about Robert Monroe for a minute and Hemisync. Do we have another call? Let's talk about Robert Monroe for a minute and Hemisync. Robert Monroe he has the Monroe Institute on and astral projection. Robert Monroe has done a lot of work in this regard, and it's very impressive. And one thing I will say about him, though, he's a natural bilocator. And in other words, he does this thing naturally. And he says 25% of people can do this naturally. They have out-of-body experiences. You know, you've all heard about runners, marathon runners, and they'd be running along, and they're running along, and then they all of a sudden they're up above themselves, floating around in the air, looking down at themselves, still running. Well, this is a natural OOPE. Now, 25%, according to Monroe, can do this. And essentially, Monroe has been working with, I think, volunteers and people that are in that 25% category. Now, we have a couple people in the OTA who are natural. And you know, they'll be hovering up around the ceiling while we're all lying down there on the floor, and they're floating around the ceiling waiting for us to go through the toggle in the mirror. And then they come down and go through the toggle when they do the path working. But they're natural OOBE people. I'm not myself. This is one of the reasons why I like Ed Peach's book, because, you know, Ed Peach's obviously wasn't. He worked like the Dickens. He really worked hard to accomplish this, and this is why I recommend his book perhaps over Monroe's, although Monroe's are very good. And now, remote viewing, which was actually done by the Defense Department, as you know, and they actually had some good results with this. Now, the important thing that we learned from remote viewing about this, and this is the thing, and Ed Peach says this over and over again, and I cannot emphasize this strongly enough, that these other bodies are part of you. You don't have to send something out there with a silver cord. If you want a silver cord, okay, you can have one. But if you don't have to send something out there with a silver cord, and if somebody cuts the silver cord, you're going to die. That's not true. The dangers of astral projection are not the way the old occultists talked about them. The dangers of astral projection really are in becoming obsessed with it. Becoming astral junkies. That's the danger. And this is why Kirpal Singh, who was Paul Twitchell's master, this is why he broke all association with Kirpal Singh. I mean, with Twitchell, when Twitchell started the Ekankar, because Kirpal Singh said, look, we do this as a training exercise, and we take the people on an astral tour, and we have certain attention points that we want them to get, and you're making an entertainment out of it. And off they go on the astral, and they can get into the wrong stuff, and they can, you know, they can start. This is not now. That was Kirpal Singh's point of view. Monroe, I notice, sponsors and recommends going off and exploring all this on your own, and that's fine. You know, I think Kirpal Singh was being perhaps a little too critical, but that's the real danger in astral travel. It's not having the silver cord cut, somebody, you know, imprisoning or your astral body can't get back or any of these things. That's not the danger, because they essentially are all inside yourself. You haven't gone anywhere, really. But then remember, in Hermetic philosophy, it's all in your head, like Lon says, but you have no idea how big your head is. So you're not going to get, if somebody comes and shakes you while you're off on an astral projection, well, it might not be so good for you. You might not feel so good, but don't go on it. It's not going to hurt you that much. And so your real danger here is in getting obsessed and getting obsessed with what you're uncovering, and getting going off. And it's like I said, if you use that sexual method, well, that's some people would say that's the wrong thing to do. Well, you know, maybe it's the wrong thing to do, but at least it does work. Anyway, the remote viewing people, and with working for the government, they had some really good results. Now, if you read remote viewing studies, they're really good ones, you'll find that they were being so scientific in the way they were doing this that they really did confirm genuine results. And this wasn't just wishful thinking that they were doing. They weren't entertaining themselves. They really did scientifically establish that this can be done. And yet, these people were really not going all the way over to Russia and looking inside secret facilities or anything. They were really doing it as far as physically, and yet something was going over there, and something was seeing these things, and something was telling them. So what was that something? Now, Leadbitter, years and years ago, came up with this idea of the pineal gland sending out a great big long stalk with an eye on it. Well, come on. If he wants to use that for an analogy, okay. I prefer to think the Hermetic theory that this is the universal mind and you're attuned to it. You're hooked up with the universal mind, and more when you get to that, you get that hookup, you can go anywhere and do anything. Now, you know, along with this, before I leave Monroe, let's mention Hemisync. This Hemisync is Monroe's development from the binaural beats musical theory. This is supposed to synchronize the two hemispheres of the brain. That's why they call it Hemisync. And we used it one time while we were doing an Enochian Aether, and it was too distracting for us. Now Monroe, of course, claims that it conditions you for the astral. I think he's probably right. But we tried to use it, as I said, while we were going into an Enochian Aether, and it didn't work for us. But I don't know. That's just our particular trying to stick it into our system, and it didn't work. I mentioned here the music of the spheres. There's a lot of experimentation and people attempting to use music, crystal tones, tuning forks, different harmonic notes. I know Fred Adams did a lot of work with a Pythagorean monochord, and we just have a basic set of tuning forks which we use for our psychic centers. So there is particular forms of music, especially mystical forms of music, can certainly be used to direct and focus astral travel. Now, let's mention a few other things. Astral, where do you go on the astral? Besides a path working, which follows the path and the tree of life and has all these various symbols which we know are there, and you get to, you know where to go, and you would do that. Well, now, on the astral, if you want to, you can visit the recent dead. You can talk to them if you want to do that. I don't think it's a good idea, but you can do that if you choose to, because the recent dead they have an astral presence. And there are other beings that have an astral presence. And these other beings can be dangerous. Well, not dangerous in the sense that they're going to physically hurt you, but they can be dangerous psychologically, perhaps. And now, in line with that, secretly said that he wants protection. And so we're going to recommend secretly, if you're listening, we're going to recommend Dion Fortune's Psychic Self-Defense. I focus always. Oh, it's a she. Oh, secretly it's a she. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, secretly. Secretly she. Now, get Dion Fortune's Psychic Self-Defense. It's always in print. You can always get it. Read it carefully, and along with that, if she doesn't say in there, I want you to look at the Golden Dawn's Rose Cross Ritual. So one of the problems with the pentagram ritual is it lights up the astral like a flare. It's like shooting off a flare gun and out of a flare gun, and everything that's around is going to come to it, and protection or not. But the Rose Cross ritual is very quieting and it's like putting a cloak of invisibility over you. So investigate that Rose Cross ritual, but definitely read Dion Fortune's Psychic Self-Defense. Now, one of the things I want to talk about before we get off here is where do we go? Where do we go once we master the path workings? Once we get through the path workings, we know how to do this. We've mastered self-hypnosis. We know how to use the doorways, the Tantra system. We know how to do these. We've got our body of light. We've got our chakras. We really know how to do this. Where can we go? Well, you can go just about anywhere you want to. According, you read Monroe's books, I'll tell you that. And I'll give you some very good accounts of where he's been and what entities he's talked to and all of that. Now, where do you go? All right. Here again, we're back to astrology. Now, you can go to other planets. And now these other planets are not astrally. Astrally, these other planets are different than they are physically out there. They may look the same, when you go there, but they have entities, they have beings, they're populated. And these you go to these other planets if you wish to, and especially in relation to how they are in your chart. And then you might want to consider that you have a star. Everybody has about three of them, but you have a star, a fixed star that's especially for you, and you can go there and you can find a planet around your star and you can visit that. There is no, the astral is not restricted, and it's not restricted to any of any time or any space, distance, or speed. You can go there. It's with the speed of thought. Now, you can use the Enochian tablets for this. It's kind of awkward, kind of clumsy, because they've got all the signs grouped up. The cardinal signs are all grouped up on each side of the circle. But if you can figure out how to do it, and we did one time, old Frater Apollinaeus wanted to go to the Galactic Council, which he thought was going to be going on. And so we built a little pyramid, an Enochian pyramid, based upon directions by Pat Zaleski. And we used Pat Zaleski's method, making ourselves and the altar very, very big, and a pyramid very, very big on the altar. And then we got inside we jumped off on the altar, ran across the altar top, got inside the pyramid, said hello to the Sphinx inside the pyramid, then looked up at the key letter on the top of the truncated pyramid, projected through it, and went to the Galactic Council. Now, while Frater Apollinaeus was talking to the purple people with the silver hair, and I didn't see him, all I could see when I was at the council, I was sitting across this big onyx table and staring at a 9-foot-tall praying mantis, obviously female because the big ones always are, in a kind of a hooded robe. And this praying mantis is projecting to me telepathically and saying, "We are the dominant species on your planet." And I'm sitting there, and I projected back. And I said, "Okay, I have no problem with that." And now, I've told this story several times lightly as a joke, but this was no joke. I mean, this was very, very vivid. This was real. And there's some truth in it. because the insects will be here long after we're gone. And so, but yeah, as I said, Apollonius was over there, and he was talking with these Pleiadian kind of people, and that was his thing at the Galactic Council. So this does work. I mean, and it really does work, and you can get things that you would never just cook up out of your mind. And this is very vivid. This is a very vivid thing. So astral projection can be used in any number of ways. It can be used. It's an essential part of the Hermetic program. It teaches you about yourself and about the universe, and it's one of those. It's a very exciting adventure, and as I say, the only real danger in it is that you will get off skewed off in the wrong direction. That you'll find that the wrong entities will influence you because of the emotional nature of the astral plane. You have to keep your wits about you at all times, and don't challenge the entities that you encounter with proper hermetic bona fides. In other words, don't just become an astral junkie, and like we said earlier, don't make an astral of yourself. Now, that concludes this evening's talk. Now, we're going to cover, next week, we're going to cover divination. And that, of course, will include tarot and geomancy. And then, after that, we're going to get into creative visualization. So, I want you all to, those of you who are really interested in this, to see if you can find a copy of Ed Peach's, Ophiel's little book on astral projection, and sit down and get yourself into a sauna and do a little yoga and do a little self-hypnosis and get on out and call up next week and tell us what you find. Okay, and until then, good magic.